The American walks every day, normal, going to work. He's walking downtown in Manhattan, and all of a sudden, two planes hit the Twin Tower, and they have no clue why would somebody do such a thing.
Deliberate and deadly attacks, which were carried out yesterday against our country, were more than acts of terror. They were acts of war.
Radical Islam has declared the war. Radical Islam is at war now with the West.
When I saw the second airplane hit, I knew jihad has come to America.
Wake up, America. It's time to rise and protect our American way of life. You could be offended. In fact, you will be offended by the content of the show. You're listening to UAC Radio.
This is Global Patriot Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al, starring the godfather of Global Patriot Radio, the dawn of dissenting discussion, the Italian infidel himself, Vito Esposito. Him and his hitman, Big Al, are here to whack the leftists, shake down the Democrats, and put out a contract on all the jihadis that are messing with the American family. And if you got what it takes to be a wise guy, you can get made right here on the show by dialing 319-527-6706. So, get ready to go to the mattresses and say, Mamma Mia, no Sharia, because Vito and Big Al are going to give you a radio show you can't refuse.
That's right, Godfather. The call-in number is 319-527-6706. Call in tonight and tell me what, and we'll talk about whatever's got you going crazy inside, because there's a lot. Welcome to the Vito Esposito Show. Vito could not be here today due to some family functions. He says, Das Vidanya, my friends, and he will see you next time. And that's Russian for see you later. Because now it's like everything Russian is on the table because the Russians are being Russians. And they are creating a lot of ajna within our world. But I tell you, in the sports world, though, today, this weekend, congratulations go to Scheffler. He's among the top players. He won the Bay Hill International this weekend in spectacular fashion. Very difficult, hard-to-play course, driving these pros absolutely insane. Now, the Ryder Cup Cauldron put Scheffler on the map. February's fan craze, Phoenix Open, was home to his first PGA Tour victory. And in a wind-swept, cold-blooded Bay Hill way, Scottie Scheffler rode a bogey-free back nine to a one-shot victory over a trio of more accomplished players, being Billy Horschel, Victor Hovland, in pursuit of his fourth victory in eight worldwide starts. Scheffler's even par 72 left him with the 5-under par 283, which tied 1983 winner Mike Nicolet for the second highest winning score behind Hatton's 4-under 284 finish. Hatton kind of fell apart, but I tell you, that was one exciting golf tournament. Even if you're not a golf fan, it was windy. The course was long. The greens were fast, and one mistake can take you out of the tournament. It was some exciting golf. He said he had his head down all day. I kind of just tried to stay patient. I didn't make any mistakes on the back nine. That's probably really where I credited the win. And the victory is his second title in 4 weekends, so congratulations to Scottie Scheffler and the rest of the top four finishers for that exciting golf tournament. So welcome. This is Global Patriot Radio, the Vito Esposito Show, and we are happy to have you here with us. Bigfoot, Duck, Diggity Dogs, Paul Sutcliffe, always a pleasure. And Cousin and the Alaskan, welcome to the show. Thanks for listening. You're in the chat room. And we want you to call in tonight. And the call-in number again is 319-527-6706. That's 319-527-6706. Because there's a lot going on in this world. And even in the sports world, you think you can get away from Russia, but you just can't. Women's basketball is in the news. Who knew that the WNBA has a thriving Russian basketball league? But Russia's been a popular destination for WNBA players. That's Women's National Basketball Association. Don't really like it. Don't really watch it. But players like Brittany Greer, over the last 2 decades, because of the money they can make playing there in the winter, with the top players earning more than $1 million, nearly quadruple what they can make as a base salary in the WNBA. Griner, Brianna Stewart, Donna Tursari, blah, 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 names you'll forget. They're willing to spend their offseason playing far from home. Well, it's tough on these WNBA players to turn down that kind of money, despite safety concern and politics of the countries where they play. And they don't like drugs. Now, you would think that Russia doesn't have a great history of being intolerant of drugs. If you take the Olympic Russian Olympics, the Russian Olympics are world-renowned for their doping. Doping is when you're taking drugs to enhance your physical play. Well, the systemic doping of Russian athletes has resulted in 46 Olympic medals stripped from Russia and Russia-associated teams, 4 times the number of the next highest and more than 30% of the total. Russia has the most competitors who have been caught doping at the Olympic Games in the world, with more than 150. It got so bad that Russia had to change their name of their country in order to have their athletes be able to compete. And, of course, the corrupt Olympic Committee allowed them to do it. And they still had problems with doping even at the 2022 Olympics. So Russian sports, they cheat. In life, they cheat. Vladimir Putin is a KGB thug. He is a communist, a Marxist, and an all-around not good person. It's sad. And then on the other hand, you have Scottie Scheffler, who won the Bay Hill Open, and Holger sent over a video of his interview. And then in the closing of his interview, Scottie Scheffler is a very humble man, and he said at the pretty much near the end of his interview, he said, he thanks Jesus Christ for all of his success, and he thanked his wife, and he said something that was very interesting and a very good window into his character, and something that I think that we can all use for ourselves. I know that I take some of that home. He said, my life is not valued by my golf game. My wife will love me if I win tournaments or shoot 85 and go from the top to the worst, she will still love me, and for that I am very, very lucky. Talk about a humble man in this day and age. Well, Scottie Scheffler is it, and he's great for the sport. And there's a little lesson in there to be learned. In fact, here's a little parable that I like, that I like to start every show with when Vito's not here, is I asked for strength. God gave me difficulties to make me strong. I asked for wisdom. God gave me problems to solve. I asked for prosperity. God gave me a brain and energy to work. I asked for courage. God gave me danger to overcome. I asked for love. God gave me troubled people to help. I asked for favors. God gave me opportunities. I received nothing I wanted, but everything I needed. I received nothing I wanted, but everything I needed. That is very special to me, because so many people ask God for everything, or others for everything. But everything is right here on earth. That's kind of what this says. I received nothing I wanted, but everything I needed. We have the building blocks and the tools to do whatever we want here on earth. It's the decisions that we make throughout our lives to determine our life. And there's some bad stuff that happens to very good people, and good things that happen to some very bad people. Nobody said life is fair. It just is. And part of it is freedom of speech. Part of it is here that we're allowed to have Global Patriot Radio, and we're able to speak our minds. And that's a very big thing, because there's many places around the world to where you don't have freedom of speech, where a show like this could get you arrested. Or if you're a WNBA player who is over in Russia, now she's sitting in jail. She's sitting in jail because when she went through the Moscow airport, she had a couple of vials with vapes. But in her vape modules, she had a little, it was hashish oil vape, a little bit illegal in Russia. So they threw her in jail, and she's there now. The United States government is, of course, looking into it, but, she did break the law. She had drugs, she had hashish oil, and they threw her in the Huskow, the Russian for jail. So they threw her in the Huskow, and the irony is that the Russian Olympic team has systemic doping and illegal drug use. Welcome to the world of Marxism, where some doping and some drug use is okay for Mother Russia, but God forbid you come over, you're a WNBA player, and you're caught with a little hashish vaping oil, they're going to throw you in jail. And her girlfriend is very concerned. I mean, her wife is very concerned. And what's really funny is that the pictures on the news, the video from the news, they have her going through the airport with my Black Lives Matter, with her Black Lives Matter T-shirt on. Well, I guess over there, are they going to call, is BLM going to call the Russians racist and targeting black people for having hashish vape oil? I don't see them saying a damn word. And part of that reason is that the Black Lives Matter movement are communists. Their leaders are self-avowed communists, backers of Russia, backers of China, at least the ideology, the commie ideology. So poor little Miss WNBA player in jail for hashish and wearing her Black Lives Matter T-shirt or jacket, and now she's in the Huskow. Well, I hope she gets out, but she also deserves whatever punishment because she made the decision. I'm sure that she was briefed heavily. Don't bring drugs to Russia. Don't travel with drugs on an international flight. But she figured, oh, vapes. No one's going to do anything with everybody vapes. Nobody's going to know the difference. Well, it did, and she should have to pay the price. Take responsibility for her actions, do her jail time, and then come back to the WNBA, and then she'll be welcomed with open arms because a little drug use here can be overlooked, especially if you're Black Lives Matter. That gives you the ticket to get yourself undone, because very few big city DAs will prosecute. So let that be a lesson to you. Don't travel to Russia with your hashish vape. The other big news is in the Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball, if you didn't know, has they've been locked out now for close to 90 days. The MLB season, Major League Baseball season, has been delayed. And so what's all the hoopla about? Well, they're trying to resolve baseball's second largest labor stoppage. The sides remain far apart on luxury tax, minimum salaries, and the proposed bonus pool for pre-arbitration eligible players. This is what they're holding up the Major League Baseball season for. This is what they're disappointing the Major League Baseball fans over. And then there's one other interesting part of this is players said where they are in 100% agreement. Players said that they will not allow the committee to consider one topic the Major League Baseball asked to be included is that robots to call balls and strikes rather than umpires. I thought that was really interesting. I did not see that coming, but having robots call balls and strikes, it'll take a lot of the human error out of the game, probably speed the game up. So why did the players not want robots calling balls and strikes? I think because it's a human element to the game, perhaps. Could it be that the players and the teams, well, you can't buy off a robot, but you can sure as hell buy off a referee at that critical moment, calling a ball a strike or a strike a ball. That could happen, but if it's a robot, that takes it all out of it. So me and my cynical self thinking, well, that does not bode well for Major League Baseball. Yeah, they need to get the times, and if they can't have a robot calling ball and strikes, it'll make the games go much, much quicker, and there'll be less shenanigans, more trust in the game. And they should do it, because right now the games are unbelievably long, very difficult to watch, and they can do their part to do it, but they don't want any part of that. So maybe there is a little bit of shenanigans within Major League Baseball. Now, here's what I don't like is players, in return, they offer to increase the postseason from 10 teams to 12, which I don't like. I believe there's too many teams already. It's become a free agent league. It used to be that players would play for their team for pretty much most of their careers. Like you could name the New York Yankee players going back from the 60s because their teams remained fairly constant throughout. But now with free agency status, because of the free agency status, players are going from one team to another and following and chasing the money, which is their right. I don't begrudge that one bit. I think the players have an obligation to themselves to get the most pay if that's what they're looking for, or to free agent themselves over to the team of their choice, whatever that may be. And for whatever reason guides them, so be it. So following a four-day break in the talks, the union gave a written response to the owner's latest proposal that had led to a breakdown of the ninth day of meetings in Florida. And so players want to raise the luxury tax threshold from $210 to $238 million and then going up to $263 million by 2026. For the next three seasons. So there's your Major League Baseball, America's sport, quickly going right down the toilet, just like they did when they went on strike several years ago. It's just bad for sports. And frankly, if you want to talk sports, call in every Wednesday night at 5:30 p.m., Hank Jones, Polysports, and that is a great show where politics and sports intersect is what Hank Jones talks about. And you would be amazed. Sports and politics are two games that are bare-knuckle, brutal, and fun to talk about. In fact, on Saturday nights, you can even watch bare-knuckle boxing. If you haven't watched bare-knuckle boxing, watch it. Because you talk about a brutal sport, that is it. It is fun to watch. These athletes are skilled, and boy, can they take a punch. It's almost as exciting as the United Fighting UFC, which is kicking, punching, tap outs, submission holds, the whole thing. That's so much more exciting than boxing, in my opinion. But this bare knuckle fighting is something new, exciting. Watch it. So that's what's going on in the world of sports. Welcome. This is Global Patriot Radio. Vito could not make it today. He's got family obligations, but he says to tell you all hello and thanks for listening. And if you want to call in, our call-in number is 319-527-6706, 319-527-6706. And, of course, the top of the news, obviously, is Ukraine-Russia. Ukraine and Russia is on the news. Suddenly, COVID has gone away. COVID is no longer an issue. It's now all Russia and Ukraine. And you know the best part of this whole war is I haven't had to see or hear Fauci once. So that's good. That's a silver lining to this. But in a nutshell, I mean, everybody's asking, well, what's happening? Why is Russia doing this? Well, Ukraina is the Russian word for Ukraine. Claire Lopez taught me this. It's brilliant. Ukraina means furthest outpost. That means that Ukraine is the furthest outpost for Russia when the USSR was still intact before they broke up and the breakaway countries went their own way. Ukraine was one of them. And now Vladimir Putin wants the Ukraine back. Half the country supports Russia. The other half doesn't. They've been through three leaders. And the first leader was a Russian puppet. He was quickly kicked out. The second leader was kicked out for graft and corruption. And the leader now, Zelensky, he is also not a great guy. There's stories abound about him. We're learning who he is, why he went into politics, what motivated him. And the story that most people are talking about is the fact that he said that Justin Trudeau, the leader of Canada, that Marxist son of it, the leader of Canada that everybody hates because he's an authoritarian, using the COVID to make his country miserable and control its people to the point to where they had that great truckers from all over Canada and the United States are blocking the roads because they were so upset with these COVID mandates. Trudeau took these COVID mandates and literally is running Canada like a totalitarian regime, which it's not. It's kind of Western. It's got a different form of government than we do, but they are not a totalitarian regime. Well, that is Zelensky's hero. In fact, Zelensky said that Justin Trudeau is one of the reasons that he went into politics. So that's a window into who Zelensky is. And he's corrupt as hell, too. In fact, Ukraine, after three administrations, they couldn't even pass the threshold to become a part of NATO. NATO's got certain requirements that you have to fill. You have to be democratic. You have to have a certain GDP. And there's about six qualifications that you have to have. Ukraine failed each and every one of them because they're corrupt. In fact, they're so corrupt that our then Vice President Joe Biden came all the way over to the Ukraine and shook down the Ukrainians while his son Hunter was on the Burisma board. He was on the Burisma board making anywhere from, I don't know, $80,000 to $100,000 a week on this Burisma board, which is an oil and energy company. But he didn't have any, Hunter did not have any experience in that sector. So the Biden family business was to get Hunter over there to shake down the Ukrainians for money. And they did. In fact, he even did it on our dime. He went over there as vice president. There's a billion-dollar loan that was supposed to go to the Ukraine. The Ukraine, he went, after it was all said and done, he went on to a TV show, very arrogant, telling the story. And he said, this is what he told Poroshenko. He said, Poroshenko, he said, you want that loan? He says, I want this prosecutor fired. This prosecutor happened to be going after Hunter for corruption. President Biden was aiding and abetting Ukrainian corruption to protect his son Hunter, who the Ukrainian prosecutor was going after for graft and corruption. So Biden told Poroshenko, he said, I'll be here for about 6 more hours, looking at his watch. I want that prosecutor fired. You don't get the billion-dollar loan package that you were supposed to get. Poroshenko said, pardon me, Mr. Vice President, but you don't have the authorization to hold up that billion-dollar loan package. Biden said he looked at him and said, well, then I suggest you get on the phone to President Obama, and he will tell you different. So sure enough, he got on the phone with President Obama. Next thing you know, the loan went through. Bingo. Prosecutor was fired. President Biden said, oh, and they put in somebody solid. And his son, Hunter Biden, got undone. Millions of dollars went into Biden's pocket. Now, my problem with this is, one, it's illegal. And it is so illegal, but the Republicans never pursued it. And they should have. Should have pursued it big time. President Biden should be in jail for that alone. We got a caller. Hey there, welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Paul. How are you doing tonight, Al?
Hey, Paul. This is Paul Sutliff. How are you, sir? For those
hey,
who don't know,
nice
Paul.
It's nice to know that we could predict this attack on Russia back in last May, because we had Brad Johnson on, and he said it was going to happen.
And that is true, and that was on Thursdays at 6 p.m., the Sutliffian Report, and this is Paul Sutliff. Welcome to the show. So your guest said that this is going to happen back in May.
Yeah. So I had him on this past Thursday, and I was asking him, does he think China's going to take Taiwan? And he's predicting about a year and a half from now, which is kind of scary when I think about it. But I think it's dependent on what – I don't know. I'm waiting to see if – the thing that scared me, he started talking about World War III. But his prediction of where that's going to start is Turkey, because Turkey is threatening Russia, and Russia is threatening Turkey. Turkey's Erdogan's stupid enough. You want to talk about dictators? Here's a stupid dictator. You don't threaten the bigger dog. You just don't. And I mean, he could step on Erdogan and crush him easily, and he doesn't. And Erdogan doesn't get that. So Erdogan's been threatening Putin. And Putin turned around and said, you fire on us, we'll fire on you. And that's where World War III starts. And that's the thing to think about, because we've got idiots in Congress that want Erdogan highly. I was in on a call. I just hung up. I was so disgusted. And it was right just earlier in the day by leaders in intelligence in D.C. who were calling for Erdogan to be more active in dealing with Putin. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Any,
that
any
was
leader,
Eli Gold
any
Institute.
Any leaders that we might know their names?
The person who was speaking, anybody who thinks that we need to involve Erdogan and wants to push him into this, my honest belief is that they're being paid off by the Muslim Brotherhood, like the Brookings Institute. I was waiting to find out if this guy was Brookings Institute.
Yeah,
they've been found, you know, scamming people. In fact, Project Veritas just did an expose on. Brookings Institute lying about them. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Brookings Institute is paid for by Muslim Brotherhood money. So,
why do you think he made the case wanting to explode this already conflict by bringing in Turkey and having Russia go after Turkey?
The only thing that makes any sense, this is where I got so angry I couldn't listen anymore, because his reasoning didn't follow any logic from what I'm listening to. He thinks Erdogan is big stuff, and the only ones who would think that are followers of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's the only thing I could come up with. They seem to think that would stop Putin or create a two-front war, and what he's not thinking about is that. That not only creates a two-front war for him, it involves the United States in war, a required war, because of NATO. I mean, Claire has said it over and over again, we need to get Turkey removed from NATO. And she is so right. Claire Lopez hit that nail on the head so hard. I mean, and now we're paying the price for not doing that, because we could be involved in World War III.
Well, yeah, because Turkey, they have visions of Erdogan has visions of being the leader of the caliphate, and the caliphate used to be what was then the Ottoman Empire, but the caliphate is the strongest, biggest, baddest Muslim dog on the planet, and they control literally all of Islam. And Erdogan has visions of grandeur that he is going to be the leader of the next caliphate. And in order for that to happen, he needs to take over a lot of land and surrounding countries, which makes Claire Lopez's warning highly, highly brilliant. Because if Turkey, like you said, if Turkey goes rogue, we're going to get drawn into that conflict.
And this is where I think it's extremely dangerous, because the Democrats are itching for a fight, and I think part of that is because the stuff that's come out on Ukraine's really disgusted. And Ukraine is really, really disgusted that we're not helping them. We're talking about helping them. We're saying we're helping them. I mean, our government's telling people in the United States they're helping the Ukraine. They're not giving them $55 million a day.
No.
That's what we're giving Russia every day, $55 million.
This is a big data point, because where this money is coming from is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the United States of America, President Biden administration, is buying $60 million worth of crude oil from Russia every single day as this conflict progresses.
Now, yeah, he said he did sanctions, and this is where Brad was kind of laughing. He's like, yeah, okay, you put sanctions on two people who don't mean anything, two banks, so what? That's the hilarious part of this. It could come down to, okay, you could all of a sudden create sanctions that would be, I mean, if the world decided to have a fit and put severe sanctions on Putin, yeah, he'd be restricted. That's not what's going to happen. Germany is not going to do it. Iran's got to deal with Putin. That's not going to happen. Turkey's pretty much got to deal with Putin. That's not going to happen.
all these, I mean, a lot of countries have deals with Putin. Germany has a deal with Putin. Hungary has a deal with Putin. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the deal that they have with Putin is for oil with this Nord Stream 2 pipeline, whereas for Germany, it's 40% of their oil from Russia. So they may,
yes,
they're going to say the right things, but deep down, they're not going to do anything to jeopardize that source of oil, because that's the lifeblood of Germany.
Yeah. I mean, Germany, and here's the catch, that they're not, no one's thinking about. This is, again, we have to get Turkey out, because if they fire on these Russian troops, see, Germany doesn't have a choice then. Hungary doesn't have a choice then. They're into NATO. They don't have a choice. They have to engage in war. And this is where I say it's stupid that we're even involved anymore with NATO. I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't put dictators down, but at this same time, I'm saying this is this. We don't have a dog in this fight. I mean, we have nothing going by fight. You know, we have just about the same amount of good things coming to us as we had with Rwanda, which is why we did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, as I like how you use Claire's statement, Ukraine means outpost, farthest outpost. And who's that referring to, people? That's what it comes down to.
Right.
What's interesting is in Brad's interview, he said that Putin had already gotten all that he really wanted. So he believed that as of last Thursday, Putin was not going to progress any farther. So what you're hearing in the news media, I want you to think about this. They're talking about Putin not progressing. They're talking about him failing and his soldiers running away. The question is that really happening, or is Putin happy with what he's got? Because I think that's more accurate.
Mm. Well, what does he have? He has all of Ukraine up to this point.
No, he doesn't. He has, unless something's changed, I think he had all that he wanted. He didn't want, by that point, he didn't have Kiev. He didn't have that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but he does
and
now.
Then, oh, he does. I missed that. I didn't catch that.
Well, they've got it surrounded. It's all but taken, in my opinion, but I could be wrong.
You know, here's the other thing I think that's possible that's way out there. And I mean, I have heard all these crazy stories about, I try to listen to all different things, and you get to hear, I think all of us have heard stories about biochemical weapons labs on Russia's border that were in the Ukraine. I've heard accusations that they're American. That's just, I say, okay, if they're American, some people need to be held up for treason. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely among them would be Fauci. But again, there's nothing verifiable that I can hear on that. But if you had, I mean, this is what I was just saying today. If that's true, if we think about that, okay, if Mexico decided to put a biochemical warfare place near our border, we do. We go down there, we'd kick some ass, and you know, that would be it. You know, we wouldn't really care. I mean, you're doing this on our border? No, not happening. We're not accepting it. What did we do with Cuba? We blockaded them. They couldn't get food. Couldn't get anything. So that's what it comes down to. I mean, I see Ukraine, Russia wanted a warm water port. They got it. And Turkey won't. If they say boo, they're going to get crushed. And I see this as being a huge issue, but that's what they needed, the warm water port. And that's to stay strong and sea dominant throughout the entire year.
As in what they wanted in Syria. That's why they backed Bashar al-Assad, so they get the warm water port there. So then they could form a nuclear umbrella with their submarines literally throughout the whole region without having to take over all that land.
Yeah, I'm
so did
I'm
they really
to
need the Ukrainian land?
Yeah. I think there's more to come. I don't think I'm not sure whether to call. I mean, everybody's, even Brad is calling him a dictator, and I think people forget the Russian people love Putin. They don't. I mean, all this news you're hearing about him hating Putin and stuff like that—that's not accurate. They love him. They believe that Ukraine is part of their country. It hasn't been. I mean, this is the their thought process is different about this than the Western European or whatever else out there. Their take on it—it's totally different. That's misinformation that's purposely being told to you. And this is why I've been telling the people in my church, turn off your TVs. Turn off your radios when they start talking about this, because 90% of it, even off of Fox News, it's wrong. I mean, they got caught, several stations, and of course it's got to be CNN, got caught playing news from other countries portraying it as what's happening in Russia, in the Ukraine by Russia. So this is stuff we have to be careful. I mean, you cannot trust, especially CNN. Oh, yeah, that was the big thing I saw this morning. I was on Twitter, or it was Getter, and CNN had made a statement, well, we're not doing any broadcasts in Russia. And the question is, who do we need to go to war to get CNN to stop broadcasting here? Russia won big. That's the big response. So if Russia wins out of that, well, I mean, I agree. If any place CNN stops broadcasting, they're the winners.
So true. But Russia's yeah. got this. I mean, Russia, Ukraine, they're not even using... They haven't even got into their second or third tier forces yet. They just put their first tier. And what a lot of people don't know is that how Russia fights a war is they put in their expendables in tier one to go ahead and get the war started. Then they'll bring in their higher technical weapons and their better soldiers, more seasoned soldiers to do mop-up in tier two. And then in tier three, they'll bring in their equivalent of our Navy SEALs, the top echelon of fighters, along with the top technology and high technology weapons to do the most damage. So Putin,
yeah, this
believe
is,
it or not, has put on the brakes. He is not.
Yeah,
he
this is
flexed
very,
his muscles
very patient
in his
war.
Fullest.
Very. If he hasn't really pulled out the stops, is what you're 100% accurate. That's everything you're talking about is what I've been hearing. He hasn't – no, they're talking about him going all out and doing all this destruction. You know, the day I heard – I was listening to Fox News, and they were on the top of this building. They were talking about hearing small arms fire, okay? You couldn't hear anything. Maybe they were hearing it, but okay. And the day before, they gave out – the Ukrainians gave out 16,000 guns. So,
right.
You know, let's think about that. I mean, that means – okay, and this is where Brad said, well, they're probably out there shooting at shadows.
Well, the other thing, too, with them with Ukraine handing out guns to every adult, well, every kid 15 years old up to 60, man or woman, elderly or not, it didn't matter, they were just handing out guns. As you see these reports coming out of CNN and MSNBC about human rights violations, war crimes against Russia, but when the Ukraine is handing out weapons to every citizen, there are no more war crimes because now every citizen is a legitimate soldier.
That's a sad, sorry truth, yes.
Yeah.
And that's something... they don't want people to know. I mean, this is where, I mean, in the United States, many of the citizens are armed. It's one of the reasons why Japan was scared to come here. Because, you know,
right.
Tom down the street might have 10 guns. You know, you might have six people in the middle who don't have anything. But, you know, he might have, I mean, if you're in trouble. And it comes down to that. And the United States is well armed, regardless.
Yeah.
And we will get your ass.
Stayed out. Japan didn't even think about invading the United States because they believed that behind every blade of grass was an American with a gun.
Yes.
Germany was a little thick-headed on that one, but yeah.
What's that?
I said Germany was a little thick-headed on that one. They weren't even going to take a they weren't ready to, they wanted to take they couldn't take England, so they figured they couldn't take us.
That's true. Well, thank God they got stopped in Africa, or else it would be a whole different world. But but Russia, what I heard, the body count as of today was 456 civilians dead.
Yeah, that's pretty low for a war.
That's what I heard. And then you compare that to all of the news coverage. It's been nonstop 24/7. You'd think that I thought that there were massacres, apartment buildings getting bombed, people in the subway getting bombed, and then I hear 456. Well, that's what led me to believe that Putin is putting the brakes on. And that doesn't make Putin a good guy. Putin is a commie bastard, KGB thug, not to be trusted. My biggest concern with him taking over Ukraine is, will he stop there? And I don't think he will stop there unless he is...
I don't think he wants to fight NATO. I don't think he wants World War III. This is where my thoughts are probably different than many others.
I
think there's one concept that Trump impressed on him. It's the concept of legacy. So if you look at it that way, he's at that age where you start thinking about what are you leaving your kids? So if he can say he brought the outpost back, if that's how you can look at it, and he brought the outpost back into Russia, will that make him a great man in Russian history? Will that make his name remembered? Probably.
Absolutely, yes.
He's not restoring the Soviet Union. He's restoring Russia.
Yeah. And from the Eastern mind, that's how they think. Not how we think from the West, but from the Eastern mind, he would be a hero. He would go down the history books, like you said, is bringing the foreign outpost back into Mother Russia.
And this is what we have to. I mean, if you just start with that mindset, or this old, and you're not that long. I mean, got 10, 20, maybe 30 years left. What are you leaving behind? Is what they're saying. I mean, what is it that Putin wants to leave behind? That's you know, if Biden had, you know, if he wasn't in full thrown full-blown dementia, that would be the question that the people in national security would be asking. But that's, you know, we have a president who doesn't know, you know, enough about, I mean, I'm surprised he can go to the bathroom on his own. But, you know, I have some real, I mean, maybe he's wearing those nice diapers, I guess. But my thoughts are that this man who can't, you know, find his own way without being led someplace, has handlers who are so lost on the concept of national security. That was a huge issue that actually Brad talked about, because and it was actually brought up the week before my show with Todd Benzman, because both of them discussed how you have two camps in the two different groups in the Biden camp. You have the idealist and you have the pragmatists. And the pragmatists are starting to win. And it's driving the Democrats nuts, because that's what happened with the State of the Union address.
Yeah. Hold on one second.
The pragmatists were kicking their butts. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey there. Sue, is that you? Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Al.
Hey,
I just had a question.
Yeah,
hi Paul too. It's great to hear you. Who are your news sources, Al? I'm just curious. Where are you getting your information?
Well, what I'm going to get into is I am getting this story about 11 ways that the Western powers are escalating the war in Ukraine. I'm getting that from IWB, which is investmentwatchblog.com, is one of them. It's fairly trustworthy. getting it from Fox News, and then whatever I get from CNN, I just take the opposite.
Well, no, I'm curious as far as only 453 have died. Where did that information come from?
That, as I said, that's not verified. I haven't been able to verify that. But that is a number that I've heard, but I haven't verified it. So I had to qualify
that. Where did you hear it? That, because I haven't heard that anywhere, and I'm going all over the place.
Oh, okay. My wife says she heard it on the news, and but I'm not sure what the source was.
Oh,
so if you can't
okay.
find it, it may not have been a good source. So that's why I kind of qualified that one. Usually I like to check my sources, but the news is moving so quickly that that I got to qualify some things as unchecked, and that was one of them. But if you do, if you haven't found that corroborated anywhere?
Yeah,
I'm looking
I haven't.
So
and I'm going both sides, you know, and I'm going so radio free Europe. I mean, I'm going all over the place because
I'm glad you're checking. Thank you.
So as of Sunday, Al Jazeera reported 352 dead.
Al Jazeera, I trust them a lot.
Oh, yeah. But again,
but anyway.
Yeah. So that's the if that so his if let's just throw it out there and say if that's possible, the UN or sorry other Islamic not UN, the UN was saying as of let's see, what date is that? I see the 453 number, but that doesn't make sense. They're talking about one point as of February 24th. They were saying 200 and something dead. That's from
that.
The UN. That was.
Yeah, I can see
February
that as of February 24th, but that.
Well, that's only last week.
A long time ago.
That's
that
only last week.
So even if you triple that, even if you triple that to 1,000, it's still a low number.
Yeah.
With a full-scale invasion into a huge country the size of Texas. Yeah, you would think it'd be in the tens of thousands.
Well,
instead,
so what do you
know,
think of
that,
it?
You know, we
so, what,
just re-
so what's your analysis, Sue, on the low number or the relatively low number of dead?
I don't believe it. You know, I think there's more than the 450 or
well,
whatever. I don't know the amount, but I don't believe that number. The other question I have for you is you made the statement that if they're they're giving guns to civilians, then, you know, Ukraine is doing war crimes too, and, you know that statement there. But how do you justify that statement when you have the elderly and children are not being given guns? So therefore, not all Ukrainian citizens are taking up guns.
That's true.
They're only giving it to, you know, like the men. And yeah, there are some elderly, but they're going and saying, I, you know, want it. I want to fight and stuff. But, you know, the children aren't getting guns. And, you know, there's so many women and there's so many elderly and all of them, and they're not getting guns. So, you know, and I don't know. When I hear you talk about Ukraine, it just seems like you really dislike Ukraine. And can you explain that, or am I getting everything totally wrong?
No, because it's interesting you pick that up, because every time I turn on the news, Ukraine is the victim. And technically they are. Russia is a stronger superpower, all things being equal. Russia is a superpower attacking a smaller country, which is Ukraine, which is smaller. They don't—they have an army, but it's—I don't know—it's ragtag, I guess, is a good explanation. So you definitely have a David and Goliath situation, right?
Right.
So that's fair?
Yeah, yeah.
So how in the world, well, all the news that I've been hearing is that everybody loves the underdog. And the underdog is clearly Ukraine, in my opinion, and I can, and you agree too, right? They're pretty much the underdog.
Well, yeah, I'm hearing.
Right.
I'm
my
hearing
feeling
what you're,
is, that,
you've been saying. Yeah.
Now, why I think Ukraine is not the I don't know. Ukraine's got some issues. They are systemically corrupt. And their leaders have been corrupt since Ukraine was found. And as I mentioned to Paul, Ukraina, which is Russian, meaning that it's a great outpost of Russia, back in 91, I guess when the wall went down and then Russia split up and they had their satellite countries that broke away, and Ukraine was one of them. So
right.
Now Russia wants Ukraine back. Right or wrong, they believe that the Russian, or I should say Putin, believes that Russia, that Ukraine is the furthest outpost of Russia, and they want Ukraine back, right or wrong, however you look at it. Now, if you're from the West, we look at it one way. As Paul's pointed out, Putin's point of view is, yeah, he wants a legacy, and if he can bring in Ukraine to Mother Russia, he will be looked upon as a hero, because he's right. The Russian people love him. I personally think he's a commie bastard thug. I don't like either one of these people. I don't think either. There's not a good guy in this fight. I mean, they are so corrupt.
Yeah,
you know about President Biden and Hunter going in to Ukraine and selling influence and just sucking millions of dollars out of Ukraine for their own business and own personal purposes.
Right.
Right
now
at the
I'm
highest
reading
level.
Last Map from Hell, and it details what they did, you know, and it's all on his laptop, because his laptop had information from pretty much the very beginning, you know, with Biden. There's a treasure trove of information there. But,
And then for the United States to go into a sovereign country and shake down the president of Ukraine to fire one of their top prosecutors, because the prosecutor is going after the vice president's son, Hunter, for corruption. That's pretty ballsy to do that. Probably illegal if it was to ever go to court. I don't know. But so you asked me why I'm not a sympathetic voice for Ukraine. That's the foundation of where my voice comes from.
You know, I've also been trying to look up the current leader who of Ukraine, who you're saying is corrupt. It's really hard to get a lot of information about him. He was voted in by 76%. His election was almost like Trump's election in the United States. And the media and everybody, you know, he didn't stand a chance or anything, but the people went for him. Now, I've been trying to look and see, you know, what corruption has he done? Because I'm having a lot of trouble finding information. So what do you have on here?
There are connections between him and George Soros. And that's been a lot in the media lately, but it's not in the major media outlets. They don't want to talk about it, that George Soros is financing those people who are currently in the Ukrainian government. And that would send out alerts, but there's actual connections of proof to people who are in government currently. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that election, That is so accurate. Thank you.
Well, you know, there's also what I think. Have either of you watched the documentary Ukraine on Fire?
I have not.
Wow, you really, really need to go there. And there is also two videos now. It's Russian and it's translated. You know, if I'm pronouncing it right, you know, the Maidan, you know, when you had the snipers and they had the protest and there was the firing into the crowd and everything. Do you know the incident I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay. When you go back there, this Ukraine on Fire will go into it. But George Soros has been involved from the day that Ukraine, actually before Ukraine, you know, was separated from Russia, he was already going in there and getting his, you know, cells and everything in there. But there's these two videos, and you can find them on my timeline because somebody wrote an article. And when I read an article, I just don't read it. If it's got, you know, where there's the light blue and you can click and go further, I do that. I, you know, go the extra step. And anyway, what it came up with was videos 5 years ago, the snipers, some of the snipers involved in this came out and spoke to this one news source. And it is chilling. It came out of Georgia, not Belarus, to start out with, you know, with what they're saying. And it's just chilling. And they were sucked into it. But it was the CIA, and there was a CIA operative who was controlling, you know, what went on in there. Then if you go further and you watch Ukraine on Fire, you are going to be absolutely amazed at, you know, what is happening with the Ukraine government and the involvement of the United States. And
so would you say based on everything that you've seen in these videos, is Ukraine good guy or bad guy?
Ukraine's government have been bad because they have been manipulated and operated, I think, in a large part by the United States. The end of Bush's era, especially during Obama, Biden, Hillary Clinton, and they did all of this, of course, for, you know, money, power, money laundering, and all of that. And you know, the citizens of Ukraine, they had enough of it. Basically, Ukraine was the United States now. That's how it was being run and what was being done, and the citizens were getting, you know, shafted and everything, and they did an uprising, and they elected Zelensky, who I think that's how you pronounce his name, who's in power now. The curious thing that I'm finding now is Zelensky, I don't know, I'm not finding anything connecting him with the Democrats. And he wasn't supposed to win. He wasn't Obama, Soros, Democrats, prime candidate.
He was picked by Soros to win, so that he was set up
Where's
to win.
Where's that information? Because I'd like to go look it up
read. I think Epoch Times has something on that. I would look at Epoch Times because I think I saw it there. Epoch Times had I'm pretty sure they had a piece on that. There's
what
a lot of connections between Soros and Zelensky. Yeah, there are a lot of connections.
What's their proof? Where do their sources?
They have the documentation. I'd have to go back, but I mean, I think I read a piece about 2 weeks when this first started. I believe that Epoch Times had something on the Ukrainian
government and the connection with Soros.
Okay, because I can't find it, and I've been looking. If you could throw it in up on Twitter, or you know,
I'll put it up when I see it.
Yeah, because I'd really like to read it because it's very, very difficult right now to get, you know, anything at all. I mean, the first thing that Zelensky did when he went in there and they were crooked is he dissolved his parliament. The people were ecstatic, you know, and I'm not saying he's a good guy, you know, all the way, but I don't think he's as bad just because maybe Soros said, I want this guy in, doesn't necessarily mean Soros is pulling his strings, you know, totally. And Kyiv is a Russian-speaking city, and look how they're, you know, they're fighting. You know, Ukraine has different languages, but, you know, where it's Russian-speaking and where, you know, their roots are very tied into Russia, they're fighting. So
I think there's
some people fighting, but where they are majority Russian, I don't think they're fighting Putin. That's where I think those people aren't fighting. It was interesting because what Brad said on my show is that that Putin had hired. It connects to what our shows have been a lot about. He was talking about how Putin had hired Chechen Muslim assassins to take out politicians.
Yep.
And
right. That
kind of, yeah. So if we look at the politicians being taken out, I mean, we're not being told anything about that. But this is the stuff that's where you start sitting there, you know, paying attention.
Right,
to,
that was at the very beginning.
No one's talking about who's
been
taken out.
Yeah, that was last week at the very beginning of the conflict.
What I've heard and, what you know, in my research and stuff, that there's been three assassination attempts on, you know, the administration. What my sources are, you know, what I'm reading and everything, and I don't know if it's true or not, but, you know, they were saying they were turned in by Russians, you know, who knew what was going on. But these people, these assassination Chechens, they were implanted years ago. They've been there for a while. You know, they just didn't all of a sudden infiltrate in. They have been, like, in Kyiv and, you know, different places. But anyway, thanks for answering questions. I have one more question that I cannot figure out. And what is with the Syrian guerrilla fighters going in, and whose side are they on, and what's happening there?
Ooh, good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I'm definitely going to look it up.
Yeah, they've just recently, or, you know, and whether this is true or not, but I'm not hearing it on the news, but it's coming up, you know, people are posting articles and, you know, different reading and stuff like that. And, you know, supposedly Syrian guerrilla fighters have been, you know, now are coming in. And I'm just wondering, whose side are they on, and who are they, and is this true? And, you know, that's another aspect that's kind of interesting right now, if it is true. But like I said, I use Radio Free Europe. I use Russian sources. I use, you know, Democrat, Republican. You know, I just go all over the place trying to find this stuff out. But you guys should really, really watch the video, Ukraine on Fire. It is on YouTube. I don't know how long
Will
it'll
do.
Stay, you know, but it is good. Anyway, thank you. Bye.
Hey, well, thank you. And this is what makes your point of view so interesting, is that you do the research. And so thank you for calling and sharing this with us, because I'm definitely going to look into the Syria connection. I'm not aware of that.
I just found her article, what she's talking about. The U.S. says Russia – I got this from – this is on Yahoo News, believe it or not. It's titled, U.S. says Russia is recruiting Syrian fighters to aid in the Ukraine invasion and help take Kyiv. And my statement on that is pretty much what I said to Brad when he was talking about the Chechens. I said the jihadis don't care who they're killing as long as they're non-Muslim.
That's true.
Willing to work.
Hey, and don't forget that in Ukraine, they sided with the Ukrainians sided with the Nazis, and they were very exuberant in there and skilled in killing Jews. And they have Ukraine's got a long history of killing Jews and the others, so that's part of the reason why I think there's no good guys in all this, but what we're witnessing.
And Getter, that's the big discussion.
Yeah.
Is who are the, because they had a quote from like CNN calling Putin a Nazi, and they're like, okay, so who has the history of working with the Nazis?
The propaganda level is at such a level. I mean, because what we're witnessing is this tremendous outpouring of support for Ukraine. The anti-Russian hysteria has reached levels that we haven't seen since the days of McCarthyism. And at times like these, it's important for us not to be carried away by the emotionalism. And that is running high, because when everybody becomes really emotional, it's easy to make mistakes. And in this case, we desperately need our leaders to have cool heads so they don't end up transforming this conflict, as you said at the very beginning, Paul, this conflict in Ukraine into the next great global war, as your guest said, that we're clearly going down that road and quickly. And in this article from Investment Watch, they have 11 reasons is what we are doing to inflame this situation. And number one is that our U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says that NATO countries have been given a green light to send fighter jets to Ukraine, which is true. And the Russians have already clearly warned us that anyone that chooses to do such a thing could be considered an active participant in the conflict. Blinken also announced that the Biden administration has told authorities in Poland that it will give them new fighter jets to replace any of their older fighter jets that they decide to send to Ukraine. That would be like the A-10 Warthogs, which they can, the Ukrainian pilots, I think they have a score of them that can fly the Warthogs. And number three is CNN's reporting that the U.S. and other Western powers are using a secret airfield in Eastern Europe to funnel hundreds of millions of dollars worth of weapons to the Ukrainian military. So what happens if the Russians decide to bomb that airfield? Of what you said earlier, one of the points that you hit on is, could this conflict be blow it up by hitting something in Poland or something in another country, and then it's going to bring in NATO?
And that's
just the top.
It's like daring Putin to start a war with NATO. That's what I see some of this as. Like, okay, I dare you. I'm putting it right here. Take a look. We're right here. You know.
Yeah.
If you think about that, if you're moving weapons someplace to help a friend, you're not going to tell people where it is. But
right.
You know, Joe Dementia and his team, they're telling everybody.
I don't think it's dementia. They're making a cascade of decisions to fuel this outcome that is going to heighten all of the unrest and possibly blow this up into something bigger. Because even Senator Chris Murphy says that it looks like Congress could soon pass a new package that contains $10 billion of additional funding for Ukraine. Now, unless
you don't have money to give
data
away.
Points
are
– yeah. Yeah, unless this is propaganda coming from the United States, because I've heard all of these on the news, different stations, different sources of one or another, and if this is true, I don't think that the Biden administration has the wherewithal to put out high-level propaganda, so it is probably true. So,
well, Lindsey Graham
is
going back to his Obama type feeling, you know. So he's starting to go along with the flow because, you know, that's Lindsey Grahamism. Yeah.
Right. And yeah, like you said, Lindsey Graham, he even put his idiot hat into the mix by calling for the assassination of Vladimir Putin on Twitter, which shows a profound lack of knowledge of the Eastern mindset and that of the Russian people, because, like you said, the Russian people love Putin. They're not going to assassinate Putin over this. They think he's strong, and he's going after, for all the reasons we gave, he's going after the furthest outpost of Russia, and he's restoring the motherland. Lindsey Graham is an idiot.
Yeah. I see a lot of this, and this really bothers me, the amount this is what Brad has been talking about this, and some other guests on my show, is just, I look at the amount of propaganda now hitting the world, not just here. We've been talking about it being bad here, but it's hitting the entire world at the same time. This is, again, why I say keep turn off when you hear on the TV, Russia, Ukraine, turn it off. When you hear it on the radio, turn it off. One of the only places you're going to get the correct information is those places that aren't making millions or
so
thousands. I don't even say thousands, because what they want to get out is the accurate information. So organizations like Global Patriot Radio, in general, I recommend a lot of good ones. You can go to Getter, and you can find some good places on Getter as well. There's a lot of misinformation that's scary.
Right. Now here's
I think
from
that
the New York Times.
You gave is correct, by the way.
Yep. Now the New York Times.
The number is death.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Oh, okay. So my wife was correct.
I believe it's correct. I believe it's correct.
I think that's a huge.
Yeah.
It's an important number in that it is so low. That means that everything that we're getting in the news is either exaggerated, is exaggerated, no question about it. And that tells you that take a step back. Let your emotional feelings simmer down a little. Tap it down. Because even the New York Times is putting out
news. We're not saying that 400
is
a small amount of people. We're saying if we're talking about a war, you know, war is, without a question, hell.
Right.
But
right.
It's a small number for this battle.
Yeah. Right. In the middle of a civil war, it sounds kind of cold. You're right. When I say it's a low number, that could be taken as a cold and calculated comment. But in reality, for this situation, a civil war of this size, it is a low number, I'm sorry to say. And now the New York Times is even getting into this, and a story was put out on the New York Times, which is the news source for the mainstream media. If it's in the Times, then it hits the mainstream. They're putting out stories that small groups of military veterans all over America are planning to go over to Ukraine to join the war. Now, think about that for a second, because that story from the New York Times is saying that American boots on the ground are going over there to fight the Russians. That's expanding the war. Now, according to the Ukrainian embassy,
which again brings NATO into the war.
Bingo. And according to the Ukrainian embassy in Washington, over 3,000 Americans have already applied to fight the Russians. And it's being reported that politicians in Germany are actually considering reestablishing a military draft. Which is okay, I've got no problem with that, because they don't know where Putin is going to stop. It's prudent that they do that if they feel the need. And MasterCard and Visa, as we know, suspended all operations in Russia along with American Express. So,
well, they're telling us
with
that.
Each,
it's hard for me to believe they're doing
they're
it.
Yeah, they're telling us that. Right. Now, with each new day, Western governments are imposing even more sanctions on the Russians. Vladimir Putin stated that such sanctions are essentially a declaration of war, which I take that as just hyperbole. But all of these other data points that I presented in total are huge, because it's poking the bear. It's poking the commie Russian bear, into doing going to a place that he may or may not want to go. We don't know what's in his mind. But where this is pushing him is expanding this conflict into something bigger and deadlier and more dangerous, and it could blow it up to World War III. Because who thought in Vietnam the Tonkin incident would have sparked the Vietnam War?
Now, I think the place to watch, I mean, we have to look at who is not, I mean, if Putin does act, if he does fire back on someone, we need to really immediately look at who was poking the bear and causing that. It's not just who fired first, people. It's who's poking the bear. This sounds horrible. Now, if you're a guy, you think about back in your elementary school or high school days when you had a bully. Most people who are bullied don't stand out there saying, "Hey, I dare you to punch me, bully." You know, okay, that's not something you do to a bully because he'll hit you.
No, you hit the bully, and if you kick his ass, then problem over. But if you fight back and show strength, the bully will leave you alone 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, you have to, I mean, you have to fight back. There's not a question. But you're not going to stand there. I mean, this is the other thing that people are putting in the media, and this is the other thing that would never happen here in the States. Just like France, Ukrainians are running. Just like Syria, the Ukrainians are running. Just like Iraq, the Syrians are running. These people will not fight for their own country. If that's the case, why does the rest of the world feel a need to put sanctions? They won't fight for their own country. They won't fight for what they – if they consider this important and it's not worth fighting for, and that's my – this is the biggest thing I have. Yeah, Putin takes it. They don't fight back. I mean,
a little bit. Well, if Putin comes in and takes it, and then NATO should say, look, that's the red line. You cross that line, then NATO's coming in, and the consequences are on you. And that's that. And it can't go
further. Well, that was what was actually happening. That's what caused this. The Ukrainian rebels were inviting NATO to become part of NATO. They were fighting for that, and that was the poking of the bear that Putin wouldn't put up with.
Yeah, and remember when President Biden said, "What do you call it? A small skirmish is acceptable," and that was the green light for Putin to cross over into Ukraine. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's go, Brandon.
Joe Dimentia.
I don't think that he is. He's doing this for a reason, and I've gone back and forth. The only conclusion I can come up with is that he believes in his heart that this global warming is an existential threat to our planet. And that the only way to push this electric alternative energy, global warming, global cooling initiatives is to have fossil fuels, gas going up to $8 a gallon to make it economically no longer viable to use fossil fuels. And that President Biden believes that that will usher in the new economy being in renewable energy. It'll save the planet, and life as we know it will continue. I think that is totally insane and unrealistic, but that is that's the only explanation that I have for President Biden behaving the way he has and making the decisions that he has for the first year since he's been in office, and he's made hundreds.
Well, again,
that are going down
I would
this
count
road.
These as. I'm going to agree with Usama's evaluation that it's not Biden. You have to think of it as Obama's regime, because these are all choices that Obama's just down the street, guys. He lives in D.C. And, you know, Jen Psaki has asked, when she was talking about president, she said, President Biden. Yeah. So when you're the press secretary, you should know who your president is. Maybe she really does. She's just not allowed to tell us.
That's a tell.
But I think this is going back to where Obama had told us he wanted us to be paying as much for gas as Europe was, which was $5 a gallon. And we're quickly approaching that. California, I understand, may actually be there. I saw some prices this morning put up. It was $6 up for California.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at that and thinking, okay, so at what point do you say that was a stupid move? But this is where we get back to the conflict. This is why you see this conflict in Biden's camp between idealists and pragmatists. And the idealists are too stupid to grasp things.
Well, I think that he is an idealist, and the World Economic Forum connection between Ukraine's Zelensky and Justin Trudeau is an indicator of something bigger, because Ukraine's president Vladimir Zelensky stated that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was one of the reasons that he got into politics. Now, both of these leaders, according to Jihad Watch, are members of the World Economic Forum. Now, the Russian invasion of Ukraine is fully worthy of unequivocal international condemnation. At the same time, it may be unwise for us to blind ourselves to Ukraine's dubious activities and alliances. And this is part of the answer to Sue's question, why am I so down on Ukraine? It's not that I'm down on Ukraine. It's just that I'm trying to look at this fairly. Now, the World Economic Forum is famous for unveiling the Great Reset that Hillary Clinton brought on to us. And it's an anti-democracy agenda in which global leaders would set in motion a radical plan to transform the world economy into a socialist big government model and implement a massive Green New Deal. The founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, has praised Canadians' Prime Minister Trudeau as a model leader of the World Economic Forum philosophies. Yes. Are you there?
Al, you there?
Yep, I hear you now. Now, a National Post article last year declared that Canadian Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland's side gig with the World Economic Forum was endangering Canadian democracy, while Rebel Media founder Ezra Levant tweeted about Freeland's scary plan to make her emergency powers permanent following the crackdown on Freedom Convoy supporters. So, yet Trudeau, a man who's expressed his admiration for China's basic dictatorship and proven this administration by his actions, he has a strong admirer in Ukraine President Vladimir Zelensky. Now, many don't know that Zelensky is also a member of the World Economic Forum. Now, a lot of this might sound like conspiracy nonsense, but the World Economic Forum does have a shady past, and it's all open source information. I encourage you to do your own research, go to their website, and challenge everything that I just said about this connection, because I think this connection will give you a window into the mindset of the Ukrainian people, not necessarily the people, but at least its leader, Vladimir Zelensky, and there are no good actors in this entire conflict. You still there, Paul? Are you having some connection issues?
Yes. Yeah, I don't know what that is, because I'm on my phone and not on my computer, so I just thought that was weird.
Mm.
I could hear you fine through the computer, but I couldn't hear you through the phone. That was weird.
Yeah, well, thank you, Blog Talk Radio. Oh, did you hear about this other story about three BLM Antifa black activists convicted for framing Proud Boys for their own arson crimes?
Oh, you got to share that. I didn't see that one. Oh, my gosh.
Well, this this story, just switch gears a little, was in Law Enforcement Today, which is a very reliable source. Well, three BLM and Antifa activists, John Wesley Wade, Ellie Melvin Britt, and Vita Jones, all Black Lives Matter people, and because they're black, they reported that three men, let's see, this is in Atlanta, according to a report from the Post-Millennial, a group of Black Lives Matter and Antifa rioters have been convicted on federal charges. This after attempting to frame members of the Proud Boys. The Proud Boys are a group that fights Antifa and stands up to Antifa, but they are pilloried in the press as much as Russia is today. And they are considered, they've been called racist, bigots, and everything because they stand up to BLM and Antifa rioters. Well, these BLM and Antifa rioters attempted to frame the Proud Boys for a series of vandalism and arson attacks that were carried out on Atlanta police vehicles and the United States Postal Service property during the lead-up to the 2020 presidential election. In fact, one of these criminals was the one that burned down that Wendy's in Atlanta that you may recall. So several individuals associated with BLM and Antifa, they burned several Atlanta United States Postal Service bins and the mail inside them in arson attacks in October, which raised their arson attack to a federal crime. The three men, 35-year-old John Wade, 37-year-old Ellie Brett, both old enough to know better, and 19-year-old Vita Jones were arrested in late October 2020 on federal charges in connection to the string of violent incidents. That's October 2020. This is the first I'm hearing about it. That kind of news could have changed the election in some small way. Now, reportedly, the suspects tried to frame the Proud Boys by leaving notes near the sites of the vandalism that read, "Stand by." "Stand by" is a reference to when former President Donald Trump told the right-wing group, to stand back and stand by. This was in the media for days, bringing a lot of heartache and problems to President Trump after he was asked to condemn white supremacist militias during the first 2020 presidential election, of which the Proud Boys were considered supremacist militia, even though their leader was Puerto Rican.
I've been defended by the Proud Boys. When I was in Canada, I was speaking. I mean, they kept Antifa from hitting us and harming us. So I can't say enough about the kindness of them, because what I saw, yeah, they came to try and they made themselves look scary to make Antifa stay back. And, you know, when Antifa got through the police lines, they didn't get through the Proud Boy lines usually.
Oh, that's a great story. So you were there talking. Antifa wanted to shut the venue down, I suspect. So
they were trying to hit us. They were trying to punch us. They had a 70-year-old man. The police stepped back, and the Proud Boys weren't at this one event. And when the police stepped back to let them hit us, they knew the Proud Boys weren't there, and that happened. The 70-year-old man got hit.
And that was a big problem all through that. It seems like ages ago, after we've gone through this COVID 2 years of hell. But yeah, the police were actually siding with the rioters, with Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and they were given orders to stand down and let.
Yeah,
BLM
that's it.
Antifa,
they were given orders. They didn't get a choice.
Right. And these are people, these are men and women in blue that have taken a job to defend and protect and enforce the laws that are on the books to protect society. They were told by their higher-ups to stand down and then let these thugs come in and attack somebody else. Now, keep in mind, too, that the police are not there to decide who the good guys and who the bad guys are. They're there to keep the peace. And for them to do what they did, probably, I would say, at least 80 to 90% of them had to have been turning their stomachs. But that's what happened, and it happened throughout Atlanta. It happened in San Francisco, wherever the big major Democrat cities were. The police stood down. They didn't enforce the laws. And now in 2023, we're hearing about these. Right. And the Proud Boys came in, and Antifa didn't get through because they fought back. And I can probably almost say that the police took liberty, went after the Proud Boys for fighting off Antifa, and they risked going to jail for fighting off the aggressors.
And I actually know of a case where that was going to happen, where the Proud Boys, so the Antifa had jumped the police in Canada when I was speaking in Toronto. This is just after we finished speaking, I should say. All of us finished speaking, and the Antifa jumped the police. They took a flagpole and hit a cop in the head with it. And the police jumped back on them. They had them all down. And one of the Proud Boys lost it and had no problem giving a lick in or a lick or two. But, he also got arrested, and he apologized profusely to the cop. He didn't go after the cop. He apologized to the cop because he was hitting an Antifa commie idiot. I saw that happen. There was a lot of witnesses to it. But when the Antifa were caught, they just cried like little babies. They didn't apologize.
Right. And the result of this created a lot of agita within the community to where the police were not enforcing the law. When you have the police not enforcing the law and the bad guys are running rampant, doing all kinds of – really running free, because even if they did get arrested, the DAs are letting them out. There were Soros groups who were funding bail, and they were funding the bail of these criminals to get out of jail with just a slap on the wrist. And the incident with these three thugs, these BLM and Antifa guys – it took place around 1 in the morning on October 2nd, 2020, included several fires that were set at the West End Post Office located at 848 Oglethorpe Avenue in Atlanta, Georgia. One fire was set within a bin of mail on the loading dock of the post office building, destroying much of the mail and damaging other property in the possession of the Postal Service. The other fires reportedly damaged five post office vehicles that were parked in secure enclosed parking area. The attack was allegedly one of the least seven related arson and vandalism incidents directed at law enforcement, a bank, and other government entities that occurred around the Atlanta metropolitan area between September 30th and October 2nd. So let me repeat who they were targeting. They were directed at law enforcement, a bank, and other government entities. That's who they were attacking. And the cumulative effect of all this, well, the other one was at a parking lot of a Walmart and Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. The window of an Atlanta Police Department patrol vehicle was smashed with a brick with a note wrapped around it. And the note also included the phrase, stand by. And that's where the framing came in, because that's a comment associated with the Proud Boys. And the note contents are similar to messages depicted on an Instagram account associated with one of the Proud Boys. So according to the criminal complaint, Brett was wearing the same jacket that was caught on surveillance, footing the Proud Boys to stand by. And the long and short of it is that these BLM and Antifa people were attacking cops and then blaming it, trying to frame, these are federal crimes, trying to frame the Proud Boys. And what really gets me upset is that these assholes, these BLM and Antifa a-hole Marxist assholes, are only looking at 5 years prison time. That's it, 5 years for felony arson, attacking,
you know,
cops,
and you look at the
attempted murder.
You look at the pictures of where Putin just took, you know, parts of cities. And people are putting up pictures of where BLM and Antifa went and wreaked havoc. You know what's, you know what looks bad? Where Putin took looks nicer than where BLM and Antifa were.
Yeah. And it was a big double standard. And it created within society, it made people feel unsafe to go out because they knew the police weren't there. They risked bodily harm going out. And if you look at Marxism as an ideology, that is the first thing that you want to do is to cause unrest within the general public and make the people feel uncomfortable and have a lack of trust for law enforcement. And once that has been violated, that sacred contract between law enforcement enforcing the laws to protect the people, then the brick by brick of society falls apart, one incremental movement at a time. And in order for the Marxists to advance their Marxist ideology, they need to destroy to rebuild. And this is how they destroy, and they start with these government entities. They start with attacking the police. And it was just a crazy time, and that story that you said, Paul, is a great example of that. And now 2 years later, these arsonists, they could have killed people. I look at that as attempted murder, throwing rocks at cars and these arsons, and they could have killed somebody.
These were all attempted murders. They were trying to kill the cops. There's they should be
no
up for attempted murder at the very least.
Yeah, 25 years.
You throw a rock, you're
at
trying
a minimum
to kill somebody. I'm sorry.
5 years, done. They're out if they're not already out on bail. Absolutely unbelievable.
And it's a big difference between a child throwing a rock and an adult throwing a rock. An adult throws a rock because he seeks more than simple bodily harm. He's seeking to physically cripple or damage permanently. This is the difference between an adult and a child. The child can't see that. The adult, if you know, unless they're mentally impaired, cognitively deficient or something, they know.
Yeah. Hell, when I was in Israel in 2014, we were outside of Jerusalem, we witnessed. We were there right after a rock attack on Israeli citizens by the Palestinian Muslims, and they threw, it wasn't rocks, we're talking pieces of concrete block that went into the car. The two guys that were in the car were older, they were bloodied, an ambulance came and took them away, and their heads were bleeding. The car was smashed, and they're lucky that they didn't get killed. And that's a regular event in Israel, which is a whole different topic, but like you said, when you throw rocks, rocks kill.
It's that is the very reason why the jihadis, the Hamas, the jihadis in the area called Palestine, which is actually part of Israel, they throw them to kill Jews, and that is their intended purpose. So if we think an Antifa member picks up to kill somebody, you got to be stupid. And you know what's sad is even the children in Palestine know that's why they are picking up those rocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I was at a BLM, a Democrat Party rally in the city where I live, and there were some Palestinian jihadis that were there because they've infiltrated the Democrat Party. And on video, they're saying that we thank our Palestinian brothers for educating us on how to take care of tear gas in your eyes and also how to fight. So the Palestinian jihadis and Hamas are aiding and abetting the Democrat Party, the thugs there.
Sue from New Mexico did find the article where Soros Sue from New Mexico did find the article where Soros is connected to Zelensky. It's on the War Room. There was a lawmaker, Wendy Rogers, who came out and talked about Zelensky being a George Soros puppet.
Paul, did you also look at the other? Did you also look at the other articles that I put up?
I'm in the middle of looking. I was just going through. Yeah, you're good. You're quick.
Yeah, but I mean, just a little bit. I got lucky on how I did my search. This is just a little bit of what I came up with. I think things you want to focus on are not the recent. And this woman is Trump. You know, Trump is a supporter of hers. But anyway, I think things that were, you know, coming out before the conflict are much more reliable than the ones that are coming out now. But take a look at all the articles that I have put out, and I think you'll have the eyes open. Thank you.
Well done. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you,
if
Sue.
If you're on Twitter, look for Sue from New Mexico. She puts out some great stuff. I mean, I do appreciate her work. So, yeah, I spend more time on Getter these days. But yes, she's very good on Twitter.
We love Sue. She's awesome. And now the next story, Pompeo to Biden. Stop partnering with Russia to cut a deal with Iran. Because Iran has been out of our discussion because there's so much others. But who's financing the Russian invasion of Ukraine? Why?
Well hold on. Russia is actually more of the broker at the deal of Iran right now. Three of our own people in America have left the table because Russia is ruling that. And that's one of my I'd say go to YouTube if you want to see what I did on that. But
a story from Robert Spencer, and check out Paul Sutliff's story as well. And so who's financing Russia's invasion of Ukraine? Why, we are. Every time you buy gas, since Biden's handlers closed the Keystone pipeline and made us dependent upon Russian oil, and even as Biden's handlers ramp up the hostile rhetoric and hostile actions against them, State Department works are working with Russia on a new Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, that President Biden is drooling to get signed, no matter how bad it is for the American people. Now, these people aren't stupid. They know what they're doing, but why they're doing it and what their end game is isn't entirely clear at this point. Now, Pompeo urges Biden to stop partnering with Russia on the Iran nuclear deal. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo called on President Joe Biden to stop working with Russia and Iran nuclear talks in Vienna. So put this in perspective. Right now, Joe Biden is paying Russia $60 million a day for oil, and he's using Russia to work out a side deal and to help push the JCPOA along with Iran. Both these are bad actors. And Ukraine, we're essentially paying for Russia to attack Ukraine. Now, he added that when China and Russia are on your side of the table negotiating against Iran, you're putting America and Israel at risk. So that's why Pompeo urged Biden to stop partnering with Russia to cut a deal with Iran. And one day after the Russian invasion of Ukraine began, the United States announced that it would continue to work with Russia on reviving the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement. State Department spokesperson Ned Price on Friday said that Washington will continue to engage with Moscow over efforts to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons, even though Moscow's invasion of Ukraine had made it a pariah on the world stage. Earlier on Sunday, Israel's former national security advisor, Meir Ben-Shabbat, said Iran's nuclear program is a far more direct threat to Israel's security than the Ukrainian crisis, warning that Tehran can take advantage of the global tumult in order to make progress on the nuclear program and other areas. What do you make of that? What do you make of that, Paul? Are you still there? Nope. Well, Paul, thank you very much for calling in. That was great insight, and inciting into the BLM massacre. So thank you very much. That was Paul Sutliff. And you can hear his show, The Sutliffian Report, on every Thursday at 6 p.m. Now, the other, in the business world, we're looking, the U.S. yield curve inversion is around the corner. And the yield, when the yield curve is inverted, it is an indicator of a recession 6 to 12 months from now. So the business lesson for today is, what in the world is an inverted yield curve? What's a yield curve, for crying out loud? Well, the yield curve is the interest rates that we pay. Now, an inverted yield curve occurs when the yield curve has a downward slope to it. That means that the yields on shorter-term bonds exceed those on longer-term bonds. For example, the 2-year bond yield rises above the 10-year yield on U.S. Treasuries, then most would consider the yield curve inverted. So it makes good sense. The longer, when you got your mortgage for your house, the 30-year mortgage is going to have less of an interest rate than, let's say, a 15-year mortgage. So you get a 15-year mortgage at 5%, your 30-year mortgage at 3.5%. The reason for that is that the bank's going to have 30 years of payment, so they'll give you a little less interest rate for the longer payment, the longer income stream, the less number of years, you pay a higher interest rate for the money, because money, like everything, is a commodity that has value. The cost of money is the interest rate. Now, when the 2-year yield rises above the 10-year yield, that's not good. That means that a recession is coming around the corner. It's just, it's not right. It's an abomination. Either they're going to raise interest rates or not. It becomes a whole thing. Well, it looks like that we're heading towards the inverted yield curve. So check it out. And then when you go to your cocktail parties and you talk to your friends, you go, man, we're looking at an inverted yield curve. This is not looking good. This is another Biden problem causing a recession. It's fascinating stuff. It's economics. It's the cost of money. Because money has value. Money is like oranges or currencies or coffee or any of the other commodities out there. Now, I've got a really horrible, nasty story about Afghanistan. You remember we were there for 20 years? We just got out not even a year ago. And towards the end, we were managing Afghanistan with a limited number of officers out of Bagram Air Force Base and a couple of other outpost bases. We were able to keep tabs on jihadi, Muslim jihadi terrorists, mainly ISIS, the Taliban. We were able to keep the pressure on them. Yeah, it cost us $20 trillion for 20 years, but we were there because of 9/11 when when Osama bin Laden took out our World Trade Center and we decimated the country. It was our job, our military's job, was to keep the terrorists from reforming and then hitting us again, which in fact we did. President Biden decided to withdraw all of our forces outside of Afghanistan a few short months ago. As a result of that, when that vacuum formed, guess what happened? The terrorists are now taking over. The Taliban took over the country. And it's not just – so in Afghanistan, Muslims murder 8 polio workers. Yeah, people giving shots of polio to kids to help them. A humanitarian operation. And it's not just in Afghanistan. A Pakistani Muslim cleric has said that polio vaccinations are un-Islamic. And in Nigeria, a Muslim cleric was arrested for playing a role in sparking the murders of polio workers. The polio vaccine is often seen as a Western infidel conspiracy to sterilize Muslim children. This is why the best word for the people who did this is Muslim, because they were motivated and guided by Islamic beliefs and intended assumptions to kill these polio workers. The UN condemns these brutal killings of 8 polio workers on February 24, 2022. So the United Nations condemned the killing of the 8 polio vaccination workers in 4 locations in northern Afghanistan on Thursday, the first such attack since nationwide immunization campaigns resumed last November. One member of the vaccination transit team was killed in Tolokwan district of Pakhar province, while 4 members of house-to-house teams were murdered in 2 separate incidents in Kunduz City, according to a statement from the UN country team. 2 vaccinators and social mobilizers were killed in Imam Shabab district of Kunduz province. In the wake of the carnage, the UN immediately suspended the national polio vaccination campaign in Kunduz and Takhar provinces. These are shots that are given to kids so they don't get polio. Polio is a nasty disease. The polio vaccine works. You get it, and we pretty much eradicated polio in the West, here in the United States. Western countries haven't seen polio in years. Now, it's in these Muslim countries, mainly Pakistan, Afghanistan, where they believe that that these polio vaccines are un-Islamic, and they condone the killing of these polio workers. They're trying to do good. They're not trying to hurt anybody. They're not trying to kill anybody. They're not trying to take out any terrorist leaders. They're trying to help the Afghanistan people. And the Afghanistan people allow this to happen because they tell, when they see these polio workers, they tell the jihadis, who then come in and murder them. I hold the Afghanistani people equally responsible as the jihad as the jihadis that killed them. And these are the same Afghanis that that President Biden is bringing over here, virtually unvetted. And I say unvetted because there's stories all over the place about these Afghanis that come in. They're supposed translators for the United States when they were there. They would embed with units and act as translators. And it ends up that most of these men who are supposed to translate can't even speak English. That's how vetted they are. And we're bringing this to the United States of America. They think it's a Western infidel conspiracy. They believe that we are infidels, sterilized Muslim children. After 20 years of being in Afghanistan, we didn't change a damn thing. Islam is Islam. Well, folks, we've got 90 seconds left. I want to thank everybody for coming here tonight and listening. Paul and Sue, thank you for calling in and sharing your wisdom with us. And please be sure to join the Global Patriot Radio Network, because we have 7 shows a week from 7 different hosts. On Monday, of course, you have the Vito Esposito Show. Tuesday, 6 p.m., the Cross and the Crescent Discussion Group. Now, this is a great discussion. Muslims and Christians get together and discuss the news of the day. Wednesday, 5:30 p.m., Hank Jones, Polysport, where politics and sports intersect. And it is fascinating. The Sutliffian Report with Paul Sutliff, who you heard today, is a wealth of information. Please listen. He's a prognosticator of prognosticators. Friday, 12 noon, we have the Andrew Herod Show, a brilliant author, and his show is Conservative Casual Friday. On Saturday, we have the Usama Dakduk Show, revealing the truth about Islam. Usama Dakduk speaks Arabic from Egypt, and on Sunday we have the Interfaith Show with the Cross and the Crescent Group. We're in true interfaith, so God bless America, God bless our troops. Thanks for joining us tonight, and we will see you tomorrow on the Global Patriot Network. Adios, amigos. And Sue, thank you very much for all your help. We love you and wish you the best of health. Everyone have a great week. Stay safe. And watch the news, but don't listen to it all because it's all propaganda for the most part. Adios, everybody. Great seeing you. God bless America and God bless our troops. Bye-bye.